Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 135 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It's a much more fun episode on the way because, of course, the Braves won on Sunday evening. And as of this moment, it is now Monday morning as it's 12:01 a.m. on the East Coast. But I'm joined by someone who's not on the East Coast, Joe Lucia, man. What's going on?
I need some kind of sedative or something. That game was amazing, intense. That was playoff baseball, man.
Yeah, playoff baseball is, not that we had forgotten, because I know you cover the sport even more than I do, big picture. But, it's one thing to be objective when you're covering playoff baseball. It's a lot of fun. It's, it's high stakes. It's, decisions and all of the intrigue that goes along with it. And then the team that you want to win is playing. I would say that I am much more media driven these days and not quite as pure fan experience, but then you throw the Braves in a playoff game where they're up five runs and they're trying to implode. And it's, I think I tweeted this like in the seventh inning, like no one in the building or in the city was comfortable. And it was fun when it goes well. And when it doesn't, it's not so much fun, but it went well on this night.
Yeah, I mean, the final result was obviously incredible, but the way that the Braves got there was so stressful, especially those last four innings when they somehow held the Dodgers scoreless, despite it really seemed like they threatened every inning and they just could not get that sixth run across. Somehow, I have no idea how.
Yeah, I still don't really know how. Honestly, but here we are. What we've been doing here, basically, for those of you who might be listening for the first time, I understand a lot of listeners might not want to listen to a loss podcast, so I totally get that. Maybe you're jumping aboard for game three. We're kind of just going to go through everything that happened in this game. I got some notes, talk about some decisions. Obviously, in the end, the result was good, but this is, as people would probably know that listen to this podcast, we're probably more of a process of results kind of podcast, so we're going to at least talk about the process, and we'll see what we get to. Early, though, I will say before we start, the crowd, I wasn't there because I honestly stayed back somewhat for this podcast. I had some Hawks coverage today as well. It was a full day of work for me, and as a result, I didn't want to be recording this podcast at 2 a.m. and trying to get someone to do this with me at 2 a.m. So that was why I didn't go, honestly. But the crowd was apparently incredible from everyone that was down there. I'm not the biggest fan of the tomahawk chop in the world. I don't like that, really. But aside from that, there was a lot going on, and apparently it was kind of a raucous atmosphere, which is fun. It was supposed to be the best crowd in the history of SunTrust Park, and apparently it was that.
Yeah, the crowd sounded awesome. They were loud. They were into it, especially after Acuña's grand slam. Everyone was going crazy. And, that's the atmosphere that, the Braves and their fans, need to build at the park. Because, at Dodger Stadium, I was there at game one, and from the beginning, all game, it was loud. And you could see it getting in the Braves' heads. And the Braves need to have that home field advantage of their own. They can't just have, fans sitting on their hands, everything echoing and so on and so forth. That did not happen tonight. It seemed like every pitch was just, the crowd was living and dying with it. It just seemed like a really awesome atmosphere. So hats off to everyone that was there. Do it again, I guess, tonight. Yeah. Now. And I know it's a 4:30. Mid-afternoon start, which really is going to suck for everyone, but I really hope everyone just is able to bring it for one more night.
Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, it was a fantastic atmosphere, and, and we'll talk about when we sort of get there, but when the Walker Buehler meltdown was happening, it did feel like the crowd was a part of that. You never know how much of it was the case, but a young pitcher like that couldn't throw a strike for 10 minutes, and the crowd was, clearly quite loud, audible on the broadcast, like kind of rocking it, and a guy like that clearly, you know, he was not himself in that moment, and you kind of want to give some of that credit to the crowd. So shouts to everybody that was there, including some of the Talking Chop staff. I know Eric was there, Doc was there, a couple other people. I wish I had been there too, but a lot of fun. All right. Oh, by the way, one more thing before we start talking about this, like, nuts and bolts wise. What do you make of the FS1 camera angle with, like, the extra zoom lens that I absolutely hate? Like, it's the weirdest thing in the world. After you watch one camera angle all season long and FS1's, like, half zoomed in and you just don't have the same visions. I don't know. It was bothering me a lot. By the end of the game, I got used to it, I guess. But the first few innings, I was like, what is going on with this camera angle right now?
Like, it really confused me because, like, Fox airs so many baseball games right a year. And then it comes into playoffs. It's like, all right, we're going to change everything up. And I almost felt like I was, like, watching a video game with how zoomed in it was. And, like, I just got a new giant 4K TV. So the ads behind the plate, you could, like, see them being, like, extra great. Rainy, and it just really looked awkward and gross, and I hope for tomorrow they just go back to the standard camera angle. And by the way, just announced Mike Foltynewicz is starting game 4.
I was looking to see if that would hit. Oh yeah, there it is, Grant McCauley and everybody else. Ooh, I like this move. Let's talk about this right now before we start. What do you make of this? I tweeted, I think it was about 20 minutes ago, that was the play for me. As soon as they went to both Gausman and Fried in this game, I was thinking it's got to be Folty, and that almost had to be the plan with the way that Snicker approached this game. But what do you make of that? Because I'm on board with Folty in game 4.
I am all on the Folty train, especially at home. I think he really thrives off that home crowd really well. And we've seen him just come out to the mound at home to shut teams down. And I really think he can do that again. And I'm really hoping he goes, you know, at least 6, because the bullpen could really, really use a rest.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Snicker used 7 pitchers in this game on Sunday night. You know, I'm sure they were prepared for that. You know, Sean Newcomb had some moments. We'll talk about that in a minute. But big picture wise, they used 7 pitchers. The only guys they didn't use, you know, Tehran has not been used in this series, and it looks really bad at this moment to have carried Tehran in the on the roster, because he's not a person that was necessarily setting up for a bullpen role. So to not use him at all as a starter looks bad in retrospect. But he's available. Obviously, you know, had Johnny Venters never pitched in this game. There are a few guys who, you know, Brad Brock's available. They have some guys who are available that didn't pitch tonight, but not everybody will be fresh. You'll see some guys 2 days in a row. Max Fried, the experience was interesting this evening. Tukey pitched, 29 pitches. Vizcaino threw 31 pitches tonight. I think he will be available, but he hasn't been great and been available on back-to-back nights a lot. And to throw 31 pitches from your de facto closer right now, a day before you play again, is not ideal. So, yeah, I mean, getting more, I think I'm definitely on board with generally keeping guys with a short leash in the playoffs, more so than a lot of people are. But Folty giving you some innings tomorrow would be very, very helpful.
It's kind of weird. The guy in the bullpen I have the most faith in right now is Ziggy Sabatka, who wasn't even on the radar in August, and now he had a strong September. He's looked really good in his last few outings. He looked fantastic tonight. He only threw 12 pitches and got 3 pretty easy outs. I mean, that's the guy that I would kind of turn to the most. And I was actually saying this early in the game, I would not be surprised if they had a couple of phantom injuries to the guys in the bullpen that have been used the most, and subbed them off the roster for a couple of fresh arms, even though, you know, Sam Freeman, Carl, Biddle, Winkler, even though they are gassed, they probably have more left in the tank than a guy like I don't know. I don't want to say Tukey, but he's been used a lot in the past in this series, and it just has not seemed like he's been all there and completely effective. So I would not be surprised to see maybe him get subbed off. Fried's been used in kind of really strange roles. He's been used for one out twice. twice. I don't know what the deal with him is. And the rule is if you sub players out for injury, they have to miss a round. So if anyone was subbed off the roster, they would not be eligible for the NLCS, but they would be able to come back for the World Series. And with Alex Anthopoulos, the Dodgers last year used a lot of DL manipulation. And now that he's running the Braves, they used a lot of DL manipulation this year. And it wouldn't shock me if that happened at all during the playoffs.
Yeah, it's something to look at. I mean, I think I'd probably bet against it, but at the same time, it would not surprise me either, given the way that Alex Anthopoulos operates in general. All right, so let's go through this thing. We kind of go inning by inning almost. I mean, obviously, there were a couple of innings that nothing really happened. Like the first inning, for instance, was very, very quiet. Newcomb induced a double play, and the Braves saw five pitches in a 1-2-3 inning against Walker Buehler in the first, which is not ideal. But the second inning was where sort of all of the fireworks began. Newcomb again got a double play, you know, his second of the first two innings against Machado to kind of escape through the, and only face the minimum through two innings. So I think people were thinking that he was pitching better than he was because he got those two double plays. So before we get to the Braves stuff, what did you think of like the way that Newcomb was pitching? Because, you know, he, at the end of the day, and you know, he lasted until partway through the third inning. He left with 23 balls and 20 strikes. He really didn't look very good. He just happened to get two ground balls that were perfectly hit in double plays, which does help, and that's part of his skill set and part of his stuff. But I thought he wasn't particularly good. I mean, he was throwing hard, but I think they also had him kind of throwing in the way that you would have a guy throw if they thought he was going to be on a short leash too.
Yeah, he was getting himself into and out of jams. Like, he walked Machado on four pitches. He went 3-0 to Turner before he singled, 2-0 to Bellinger in the second before he grounded out to end the inning. So these Dodgers hitters just were not like making good contact to start the game off against Newcomb. And the Braves got lucky with a pair of nicely turned double plays that kind of limited the damage, made Newcomb look a lot better than he was. And then the third inning came along, the wheels kind of fell off, and that was that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that here in a second. All right, the second inning was more fun, obviously. A leadoff four-pitch walk to Markakis. Another Johan Camargo, who's really struggling, had a bad plate appearance. And then a Kurt Suzuki strikeout made it seem like it was going to kind of die right there. But then Albies flares a single to center. Cody Bellinger makes a meal of it, kind of. Kicks it around. Markakis gets to third. Ozzie to second. They walk Culberson intentionally, which is the right play, considering Newcomb was hitting behind him. And inexplicably, I will say this. This is one of those result-over-process things. Letting Newcomb hit for himself was really bad in that spot, in my opinion. Obviously, the four-pitch walk made it look better than it was. In the moment, were you anti letting Newcomb hit for himself? I didn't see if you tweeted anything about that.
I wasn't, just because it's the same thing Snitker did in game one when he had Fulte come up to bat for himself in the third inning and then immediately pulled him thereafter, just because the Braves have such a short bench. He doesn't want to burn a guy right away.
The only caveat being there that it was bases loaded this time, and wasn't Fulte with nobody on? Or was somebody, maybe it was like Corona first. It was not bases loaded.
Yeah, I think there was Corona first, but anyway, yeah.
But yeah.
It was a situation where, like, I mean, I could see why he kept him in, but at the same time, looking back at it, yeah, it seemed a bit ridiculous, but maybe he just wanted to get Buehler to work a little more, throw some more pitches, maybe make a mistake, which is exactly what happened. So if you look at it from that point of view, it worked out. But again, process over results.
Yep, that's kind of what that was. And obviously, you know, I tweeted that and made a big deal of it. And of course, it worked out, quote unquote, which is always, it's always one of those fun things. Because moments later, obviously, the four pitch walk, which we just discussed, the 3-0 pitch to Ronald Acuna, which was absolutely a ridiculous call, that should have been a walk and another run, and we were all angry at the time. And then, you know, seconds later, Acuna blasts the home run for the grand slam to make that call look fantastic. In retrospect, if you're a Braves fan, by the way, Acuna is now the youngest person in postseason history to have a grand slam, passing Mickey Mantle for that honor, which is kind of insane. But I mean, just kind of a wild sequence. Very lucky in one way, in that it should have been a walk and another run, and then maybe the inning ends momentarily after that. But the way it happened was also incredible, because Acuna doing what Acuna does, and then also staring it down and kind of really enjoying himself on the base path, which I think everybody likes. That's not the people that are buried in the old school stuff. I really enjoyed him admiring it. Obviously, everybody was very excited when that happened.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, the Braves haven't had like a playoff moment in these two games until tonight, where you have the Acuna Grand Slam, then you have Freeman's homer, which were both awesome and we're going to remember for a while. There was nothing like that in the first two games. So just getting that one moment, even if they ended up blowing this game, it would have been cool to remember. But just seeing that was a fantastic memory for the memory bank. And also, if Buehler ended up walking Acuna on that fourth pitch that was most definitely a ball that was called a strike for whatever
even the broadcast reason. Even the broadcast, which is a national broadcast that's not homerific, was in disbelief that it was called a strike. Everyone was in disbelief.
Well, you say it's not homerific, but Joe Davis is the regular Dodgers play-by-play announcer, but I digress.
That's what I'm saying. It's the opposite. Like he was dumbfounded that it was not called that it was called a strike, and he's not the Braves guy. Like it was
should have
been even worse, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And like I will say, like, if he had walked Acuna, he might have just continued to melt down and maybe hung another pitch to Inciarte that he could have thrown into the corner or something like that. But just him, you know, being able to kind of clear the bases, obviously it's not a bad thing because the Braves ended up getting five runs out of that inning. But if he did walk Acuna, I think it might have – the Inciarte at bat might have looked a lot different.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point, because we mentioned before Buehler was really melting down, like could not throw a strike. That kind of weirdly seemed to settle him, the Acuna bomb, which is, you know, I think the Braves will take that. Obviously, if you can go up five runs and the opposing pitcher settles, that's a good trade-off. And Buehler was very good after that. Somehow, like, it was kind of dumbfounding. You look up in a playoff game and you see a guy who's allowed five runs and he's still pitching in like the fifth inning, and it was like, why is he still in this baseball game? And then you realize that he'd been pitching well for about three innings after that happened. But yeah, a lot of what ifs when it comes to the second inning. But the end result was a five nothing lead. You know, longtime Atlanta sports fans were not comfortable, obviously. I will say, in the moment, the Dodgers were like plus 700 in terms of betting odds. There were a lot of signs that the Braves were like a 90% or more favorite in the game. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition down the stretch here. But, you know, at 5-0 in the second, everybody was pretty excited. Then things get dicey in the third, sort of on cue perfectly in terms of Braves fashion. Newcomb, you know, walks his third guy in two-thirds innings to put two guys on with two outs. He finally comes out. But before we talk about what transpired after that, were you okay with him yanking Newcomb in the spot that they did? You know, Justin Turner coming up, the next batter. He's very, very good against left-handed pitching. We'll talk about the results in a second, but what did you think of that move when it happened, when they took Newcomb out?
Yeah, I mean, I was totally in agreement with it. You need to have a short hook in the playoffs, especially, and Newcomb had just walked Chris Taylor on five pitches after going 3-0 on him. His first pitch to Buehler was a ball. He went 2-0 to Grandal to start the his at-bat. Kike Hernandez walked to lead off the inning. It was a 10-pitch at-bat that started 2-0. He was just not getting anything across, and actually, for the evening, he only threw first pitch strikes to two of the 10 batters he ended up facing. So it was definitely the right decision, and I just cannot fault Snitker there. That was definitely the right move to pull Newcomb when he did.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously, you know, it didn't work out in the traditional way. So it does go both ways. You know, we're often accused of hating on Snitker. There was one move earlier that we talked about that, you know, it's process of results. This is one where the process was good and the results were bad, and that happens too. It goes both ways. You can have good results and bad process, and you know, good process and bad results, and here we are. But Turner, by the way, just for some numbers there, Turner has a 179 WRC plus this season against left-handed pitching, and in 2017 it was 206. For the last 2 years, it's like he has like a 185 WRC plus, somewhere in that range over two seasons against lefties. He's really, really good against lefties, and that is the reason to take him out. So Gausman comes in. Interesting decision there as well to bring in the starter in the middle of the inning, which I want to ask you about here in a second. But Gausman gives up the single to left field. Acuna boots it. And if it had been anybody else but Acuna, you would have heard a lot more about that. But obviously Acuna had just hit the grand slam, so the heat wasn't quite on him, but boots it to allow a second run. Gausman did manage to sneak out of the rest of the inning, which is very, very nice with a strikeout over against Manny Machado. That proved to be pretty pivotal down the stretch. What did you think of going to Gausman rather than like a traditional reliever in the middle of the inning, because that was a big talking point, especially on Twitter.
Yeah, I just don't think he wanted to potentially burn a reliever for, what was it, one out there in the third inning. That seemed a little excessive, especially in this do or die game where you're going to need all hands on deck. He wanted to probably end up getting through like the sixth inning or so with Gausman. It did not work out that way. But I actually agree with putting him in. I mean, he knew with the situation coming into the game, he was ready to start. He had plenty of time to get loose, and it just didn't work out. And even though I say that, he did have a 1-2-3-4. So it's not like he was completely awful on the evening.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't good. Gausman, just for the record, 2 innings, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts, 49 pitches, 25 strikes. He was not good, but he wasn't like completely disastrous either. He made a couple of big pitches. You know, the fourth inning was a 1-2-3 inning for Gausman, which I think people have forgotten about, that he got it. He sort of breezed through an inning there. So there you go. The fifth inning, things got dicey there. And I will say, you know, Gausman issuing the leadoff walk in the fifth probably should have been the end of his night in retrospect. But, you know, he strikes out Walker Buehler because I think, and it's probably because Buehler was in the game that Gausman was still pitching then, at least somewhat in that way. And Buehler hits for himself, strikes out trying to bunt. That was a gift from the Dodgers, which is very nice. But, you know, seconds later, Chris Taylor bombs to left. Not a terrible pitch in retrospect, especially if you watch the replay. It wasn't like in a terrible spot. Taylor just put, you know, a great swing on it and bombs there. You know, it's 5-4 at that point. Gausman got one more out, and then the next big decision was going to Fried. But, you know, what'd you make of that whole sequence? Gausman, did you think of him, did he stay in too long? Would you make it going to Fried? Because obviously the Fried thing didn't really work out. But in the moment, I thought that was weird and tweeted as much, like going to Fried for what was basically going to be one out, because the Braves had, I think he was leading off the next inning. If not leading off, he was going to be hitting a second. I don't have that in my notes, but Fried coming in as like a one batter reliever again. I know you mentioned that at the very top of the podcast. Really kind of bothered me. I don't really see the rationale in doing that. I know he did it again. I know he did it again earlier in the series, but I just don't understand that decision.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, why are you using Fried, who's a long guy, in the situation where ideally you'd want to use Venters? I mean, was Snitker essentially saying, okay, I might need Venters in the seventh inning or the eighth inning to get a guy out instead of the fifth inning when it's 5-4 and your offense has been stagnant for the entire series minus one inning?
Yeah, I mean, I said that at the time. It was the perfect spot, in my opinion, to use Venters. Venters is a pure situational lefty at this point. He's still good in that role, but you don't want him facing right-handed pitching really at all. That was a spot where you knew you were going to bring a guy in for essentially one batter against the lefty. I don't know why it wasn't Venters. And again, they won the game. I get that. Before people start telling us that they won the game, I understand that. That was a decision that I did not like. And of course, Muncy bombs off of Fried, which I wouldn't have predicted a home run with Fried against Muncy. The problem is, like, the process that I didn't like had less to do with, you know, hating Fried against Muncy. That's not a bad matchup to have. Fried is good, but it was you're using a multi-inning guy in Fried to get one out when you have a guy who is designed to get one out. So I don't think either one of us would have predicted that Muncy would just hop all over a Max Fried curveball. But, you know, the process was bad and the results were bad in that one, I think.
Like, the funny thing is, like, the Dodgers kind of set up their lineup with 4 Newcomb on the mound, and then they kind of had to switch things kind of on a whirl when he got pulled so early. Like, they pinch hit with Muncy for David Freese in the third inning. They kept Chris Taylor in, and he still hit the homer off of was it Gausman that he homered off of? Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was Gausman.
And then they have Fried in, or Muncy in, even though he didn't even start. He hits the homer off Fried, and somehow the Dodgers like stumble into this perfect situation for them where they are tied. The two long starter type guys are out of the game. They have their best option off the bench now in the game. It's really just a good situation for them, and I'm really surprised that it didn't result in any more damage.
Yeah, I would have in that moment at 5-5, I would have bet a considerable amount of money that the Braves were not going to win that baseball game. I'm just to be honest with you, it did not feel like the Braves were going to win that game when they blew a 5-run lead, given the Dodgers had it set up and all that fun stuff. But obviously, we know that they did. The sixth inning got dicey. The Braves did manage to escape from it. Matt Kemp leads off with a ground rule double off Touki Toussaint. Cody Bellinger then rolls over a grounder to move Kemp to third with one out. And then one of the biggest plays of the day that's probably going to be forgotten, at least in some ways, is that Kiki Hernandez grounds out to short, and Culberson delivers a strike to Suzuki, who blocks the plate, gets Kemp at the plate, and erases that threat to at least most of the degree. Touki then did walk Grandal, Yasmani Grandal, but Yasiel Puig pinch hitting, even with his reverse splits, he takes a walk, but they finally get out of there with a Chris Taylor ground out to end the inning. So, I mean, the Culberson play kind of speaks for itself. It was a huge thing. That inning did get very dicey. We talked about Touki earlier. Touki didn't look great, I'll be honest about that. I mean, he got through the inning, but it was not Touki's finest work. Credit to him though for battling through it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put out the thing I've been saying for weeks now about workload with all these guys that have thrown the most innings in their career. There's so many of them, including I believe all four of the relievers not on the playoff roster that were so good this season. Touki's another guy. He has had a long season, and I'm not sure how much he has left in the tank. He did not look good tonight at all. I am stunned that he got out of that without giving up a run. Credit to him. Credit to Charlie Culberson, who has not done much of anything at all at the plate so far this series, like the rest of the team, but has capably filled in defensively at shortstop. I know that's Dansby's biggest strong suit, but Culberson has held down the fort pretty well there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big play. It wasn't like it was a super difficult play for a major league shortstop, but he made the play, and then Suzuki did as well. Executing that was important, because if they didn't do that, it would have got very dicey. I guess, moments later, they take the lead because Freeman bombs off Alex Wood, which is very interesting, and a lot of synergy there with, of course, Alex Wood being the former Brave, traded to the Dodgers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was the first pitch of the inning. I think probably, I'm sure some people missed that because it was literally the first pitch of the inning. But Freeman it wasn't the biggest swing of the day because that was Acuna, but the second biggest swing of the day was Freeman going yard there, and that was the last run that was scored. And by the way, this blew me away in some ways, but Freddie Freeman, that was his first postseason home run, which isn't that crazy considering how long the Braves have been out of the playoffs, but just kind of reading that in print was like, oh, that's weird, kind of.
Yeah, it was good for him to get a hit. He's, like the rest of the team, he's been invisible for most of this series, so he comes up big in a big situation. He actually showed some serious emotion for once, which you don't see out of him too often. He's usually a pretty stoic guy, so for him to kind of react like that was really cool. I was getting some Eric Hinsky flashbacks from 2010. Yep.
I was building that night. That was a fun one.
I'm happy he's the one that did damage too.
Yeah, Freddie. I mean, and then after the game, we flash forward a little bit. Freddie did an interview after the game, and you could see that he was fired up and confident and smiling and definitely doing more than Freddie normally does in terms of just showing emotion. I think that's not really a knock on him. I've always liked Freddie, but he's not that rah rah guy. He's definitely the steadying influence kind of guy who's just awesome on the field. But he was definitely fired up there. It's the playoffs. He should be. And by the way, that was also, in addition to being Freeman's first postseason home run of his career, that was the first homer allowed to a left-handed batter by Alex Wood this season. And Wood's thrown more than 150 innings this season. That was pretty crazy because Wood had, I think he allowed 14 home runs on the year. They were all to righties, and that was the first one to lefties. So, Freeman is kind of a freak in that he can hit left-handed pitching as well. But the odds of that happening were not super high. It was cool.
I just want to say how angry I am that the Dodgers have Alex Wood coming out of the bullpen in the sixth inning in the NLDS.
He's like a throwaway guy. Yeah, it was pretty wild.
I mean, he would be like the game two starter for the Braves, and the Dodgers, it's like, we have like six better starters. Get to the bullpen.
Yeah, that's why the Dodgers are very good. the seventh inning was pretty, we mentioned Sabatka earlier. He was the story of the seventh inning, a 1-2-3 inning. I'm not sure he was that good. He actually gave up some pretty good contact, but 1-2-3, it was clean in the box score, and that works, and his stuff is very, very good. The bottom half was quiet. A really, really bad plate appearance by Charlie Culberson to strike out without seeing a single strike. I think he saw five pitches, and they were all balls, and he swung at three of them, which is not what you want to see. And then Lucas Duda strikes out as well in his pitch appearance, and so did Ender Inciarte. So, yeah, the seventh wasn't much to write home about. The eighth, AJ Minter made things a little bit more difficult than they wanted to be. Leadoff single against Brian Dozier. Did get a strikeout, and then really missed kind of badly against Kiki Hernandez, but Hernandez flew out deep to center and on a ball that was terrifying. I thought that pitch was gone, to be honest with you, off the bat.
Yeah, that and the Kemp Groenewold double really both terrified me, because yes, they were hit really well. And if this game was happening maybe, I don't know, 3 hours earlier than it was, they are probably both doing more damage than they did.
Yeah, so that was fortunate. Minter didn't look great, just like a lot of guys in the bullpen, honestly. But, you know, he got out of there. A four-pitch walk to Grandal was ill-timed, but then he gets Puig to ground out to end it, and then the Braves go 1-2-3 in the bottom of the eighth. So sets up sort of the Vizcaino experience in the ninth with a 6-5 lead. I asked this hypothetical on Twitter, and I'm wondering what you thought. Basically, the choice there is to start the inning with Minter, who didn't look great, and have him face Chris Taylor to lead off the inning, or go what Snicker did, which was go to Vizcaino to face what they were almost certainly going to do, which is what they did, which was pinch hitting Jock Peterson. Would you rather have Minter against Taylor, having just thrown an inning, or a fresh Vizcaino against Peterson? Because I think I would have done what Snicker did, but it wasn't a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, I think I would have gone with Vizcaino, especially since Taylor already had the homer earlier in the game. So, yeah, you know, he's kind of seeing the ball well. And, of course, Peterson is no slouch. I mean, he homered in one of the earlier games, so he's not a bad hitter by any means. But I just think that with a fresh guy in Vizzy, he might be able to take care of him easier. Of course, it was a 10-pitch at-bat with a single lined off the right field wall, so it didn't exactly end well, but
it did not. But that's,
you can't exactly get too upset about the decision, considering everything ended up ending okay.
Yeah, the process was not bad there, I didn't think. And I would say so if it was. I thought it was fine. By the way, a really nice play by Nick Markakis to play that ball off the wall perfectly and hold Peterson to a single. That was very useful in that inning. So shouts to him. I've been critical of his defense quite a bit. That was very well played by Markakis and important at that time to not have a guy on second base. Obviously, he got the second eventually because Justin Turner walked after Vizzy was ahead 1-2 against Turner and then walked him. That really, really got dicey. And then Vizzy goes down 3-0 to Muncy and then recovers. That was the biggest at bat, obviously, of the entire sequence, honestly, was the 3-0 to Muncy, comes back and strikes him out with a fastball, blows it by him with strike three. Kurt Suzuki couldn't stop. You know, things got really dicey again when Suzuki couldn't stop that wild pitch with two, I guess, on the strikeout pitch to have the second out of the inning. Suzuki tried to backhand it, and that was bad. Suzuki's not a very good receiver. That's something we kind of know at this point in time, but it didn't come back to bite him. And he did make a nice play on the final at bat to not give up a wild pitch that could have been one. So I guess we'll have to be balanced there and say that Kurt did make a nice stop moments later, but the one that allowed the guys get to second and third was ill-timed and really could have been hugely impactful, because going from first and second to second and third there when you're up by one is just, that's brutal, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I'm sitting there thinking after that wild pitch, I'm like, oh, God, now a single is going to give them the lead. And
you just
going,
can't backhand that ball. Just, you can't do it. Throw your body
I'm
in front
of it. I'm just going to start throwing up. But I do want to say that once he went three down to Muncy, I was terrified. I thought
it was over, honestly, pretty much.
I thought he was going to hit one off the chop house and yeah. I would have to, like, create a Max Muncy voodoo doll or something like that. Thankfully, Muncy decided to wave at strike three at just a great pitch by Vizzy. Perfect. And then the at-bats by Machado and Dozier were absolutely awful, and Vizzy ended up somehow escaping that complete mess that he walked himself into.
Yeah, not ideal for Vizcaino. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but Vizcaino did throw 31 pitches, which is seriously a mess, but he got out of it, and that was the end of the game. I mean, going down the lineup of the Dodgers, like, it's impossible that the Braves won this game. At least, I mean, if you're talking about a three-game sample, if you look at some of these slash lines from the whole series, Chris Taylor has an 1,800 OPS. Peterson has about a 1,200 OPS. Turner over 1,000. Muncy, 1,500 OPS. Kemp at 1,000 exactly. There's one player on the Braves roster that has more than a 584 OPS in the series, and it's Acuña. Everybody else is 584 OPS or worse, and 584 OPS, and that's just the easy stuff. Obviously, there's better numbers than OPS, but that's the easy one you can calculate with this kind of small sample. That is unbelievable, honestly. Acuña is not. I mean, he's been very good, but he's at 969, so that's nice. Everything else, it's impossible to be this bad at the plate and actually have won a game in this series. Enciarte has a 200, 200, 200 slash line. Markakis has been brutal. He has 100, 182, 100. Camargo has not reached base in the series. He's been absolutely brutal. Suzuki, 143, 143, 143. He basically has one single. Albies, same thing. He's 200, 200, 200. Culberson, very bad. A sub 400 OPS. Like, how do they even have a win in this series?
To put the team's overall OPS in context, on the season, Ryan Flaherty had a 590 OPS.
And that is better than everyone on the roster right now, except for Ronald Acuña. So
The Braves still only had four hits tonight. They scored six runs, but they only had four hits. And those four hits came in two innings, the second and the sixth.
And two of them led to five runs. Two hits to five runs.
It's not like there was traffic on base all night. They were really not doing much of anything. It almost kind of reminded me a little bit of game one, that second inning in game one where Fulte had two outs, 0-2, hits the guy, walk, three-run bomb, game. The Braves loaded the bases with one hit. Then Acuña hits the grand slam after Newcomb walks. It's 5-0. But unlike the Braves in game one, the Dodgers did not just lay down. They came out and made it a game and made us all extremely nervous.
Yeah, I mean, just to drill down a little bit further, the combination of Markakis and Camargo in the series, they are now 1 of 22 with a walk. That's just two guys where – those are highlighted more because they have more plate appearances. They've been hitting at the top of the lineup. Obviously, they were 4-5 in this game, but they had been 2-4 in the first two games. Not that most guys have been that much better, but to get basically nothing from two of your top five hitters in all three games is really brutal. Camargo just looks lost. I mean, he's had a great year. He's been one of the breakout, I guess, stories of the season is just how good he's been. But some of the guys who you've seen take at bats in the series that have not done particularly well, haven't looked terrible in doing so. Albies hit the ball hard a couple times. Enciarte has a couple of singles, nothing spectacular. But Camargo especially, and then Markakis as well, just have not looked good in the series. And Camargo is now, I think he's 0 of 12, and it feels worse than 0 of 12. It's one of those, like, they're going to need something from some of these guys. It can't only be Acuña and Freeman if they're going to try to get this thing back to Los Angeles. As good as Ronnie and Freddie are, somebody's going to have to do something else.
And because of the roster construction, I mean, you're essentially looking at, okay, if you want to bench Camargo for a day, you're starting Ryan Flaherty.
That's the thing. There is no option. I mean, people have been quick to kind of, I think they might be joking to some extent, but like people are suggesting to me like moving Freddie to third base. I'm like, they're not going to do that. I'm sorry.
No, not in the playoffs.
I will say they used Flaherty in the fifth inning today as the first pinch hitter. So if something had happened to any infielder after that, they would have had to go to Freeman at third base, because then you would have had to put put Camargo somewhere else and play Duda, because they didn't have another infielder. Like, they don't have another infielder on the roster right now. There's one guy who's played infield on the roster that's not starting, and they used Flaherty first, which I was okay with because it wasn't a high leverage spot. But that just kind of speaks to the lack of depth on the roster. And Rene Rivera, three games, no appearances.
I mean, it's okay. They have three catchers. Nothing matters anymore.
I know I've been ranting about that probably too much. But to carry a guy who you're just not going to play, like, and you know you're not going to play him, is insane. But
I'm like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Lane Adams and everything he brings to the team. But, like, he's your fourth outfielder, and you're, like, essentially saying, okay, you're my pinch runner.
Okay, I mean, cool. At least they would have the ability slash willingness to use Light Adams as a pinch hitter. They don't want to, but they at least would do that. Whereas, for instance, the Dodgers entered this game tonight with neither Jock Peterson nor Yasiel Puig starting. Brian Dozier came off the bench for the Dodgers tonight.
I mean, Muncy wasn't starting either.
Oh, I know, but at least that was a pure platoon thing. I just mean in the outfield only. Like, but yeah, I mean, in general, I think the tweet, I can't remember who sent it now. Now I'm going to be mad at myself. But I retweeted, and I'm trying to – oh, Steven. It was Steven from Walk Off Walk and MLB Daily Dish. But he tweeted that going into the game tonight, the five guys off the Dodgers bench tonight starting – the guys that were not starting in the lineup for the Dodgers had more combined home runs, those five guys, than the Braves' best five home run hitters this season. Their bench five had more home runs than the Braves' best five, which includes Acuna, which includes Freeman. The Dodgers' reserve five had more home runs for the season than the Braves' best five. That is insane.
And for the record, the Dodgers did only bring two catchers.
Why wouldn't they bring? Okay, anyway, I can't do this again.
And they haven't used their backup catcher at all.
And you know the Braves were always going to use their backup catcher because he's their best pinch hitter in most spots. You know, Flowers and Suzuki are their best right-handed bats. I get that. Anyway, I don't want to do the rant yet again. But that just kind of speaks to the fact that the Dodgers are better than the Braves top to bottom. But because it's baseball, you can win a game, and we saw that tonight. So all that to say, okay. So let's. We've covered everything that happened tonight. Do you have any more takes on anything that transpired in this game before we look ahead to some big picture stuff before we get out of here? I mean, I think we kind of covered it all, I think, decision-wise.
Yeah, I think we hit just about everything from the game that I really don't want to relive anymore just because it's so painful, man.
Oh, I will say one more thing. Sorry, I led you astray. It does look bad in retrospect. To have hit Ryan Flaherty in a game where neither Lane Adams nor Tyler Flowers made an appearance in the game.
Well, I mean, you can't use Tyler Flowers because he's your backup catcher that you actually want to use.
But you know what I mean? Like, I'm not even trying to go down that road again, but I know why they used Flaherty in that spot. It was so early that you don't want to burn a guy in a leadoff spot. You know, they don't have – I get all that. That's probably the time you want to use Flaherty. You know, probably the lowest leverage pinch hitting spot of the game. With that said, it does not look good to use him and not Tyler Flowers in a baseball game.
I mean, on the bright side, at least he didn't, like, you know, use a pitcher to pinch hit because he might end up needing all of the pitchers he can get.
Yeah, I mean, it would not have not so much this time around, but I argued briefly the other night that maybe they should have pinch hit for Foltynewicz with Tehran when they used Foltynewicz because they clearly didn't want to bet if Snicker decided that he didn't want to use a pinch hitter, they could have just used Tehran, who's a much better hitter than Foltynewicz. I wouldn't have liked that rationale, but it would have been better than what they actually did, which was letting Folty hit for himself and then removing him. Folty is one of the worst hitters in the entire league. Among pitchers. So if you were going to do that, you could have just used Tehran. But alas, that's a small advantage.
They could have done the same thing with Newcomb tonight because the broadcast was saying that Newcomb is the very worst hitting pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, Newcomb and Folty are like legendarily bad hitters. I totally get that. In that spot, you have to pinch hit, in my opinion. I will go down with the ship on that one because it was bases loaded. It was clearly a high leverage situation. You needed to score there. You hadn't scored a run in the series. It was time to hit for him there. But, yeah, I mean, at the very least, you could have used whoever your best pitcher. I mean, I'm saying Tehran because, A, he's a better hitter, and because, B, he hasn't pitched in the series. So, and if you weren't going to use him in Game 4 as your starter, which they're not going to do now, as we can see, Tehran's on this roster and is not going to be used in the series probably at this point, which is kind of, again, bad. You're going to have Tehran and Rivera not used in the entire series if things go like remotely according to plan, which is wild.
It's a really weird situation because there's any one of those four relievers that could have been used instead of Tehran. I guess he could have put someone like Adam Duvall on the roster instead of Rivera, but oh, man.
The decision in retrospect for Rivera is basically Rivera versus Duvall versus like Rio Ruiz. Like that's basically the decision. Whatever, I get it. But anyway, I am interested to see no one will probably ask this or care about this. This is the process stuff that just bugs me. But if you weren't going to use Tehran as a starter in the series, why is he on the roster? Because Tehran's a guy you're not going to use as a reliever. He does not have a reliever profile. So unless you were just dead bang set on starting him in a game, why is he on the team? That's my question.
I honestly cannot answer that. I always thought he would end up getting at least – I thought he was going to be the guy in game four. But
I mean, to be at least somewhat fair to the decision makers, whether it be Snicker or Anthopoulos, I assume, or at least I think, that if either Fulte had gone deeper in game one and or if the Braves were up 2-1, you might have seen Tehran in game four. So, like, I think maybe they were planning to use him in game four, but now Fulte didn't throw many pitches in game one and you're down 2-1. But they probably should have thought about that as an option. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that I think that they probably thought that Tehran was going to start game four before the series started.
Yeah, and they've also used Newcomb twice, once in relief, once as a starter. So he's probably not an option at all. And he's definitely not an option at all in game four.
He'd probably go in game five, but yeah, not tomorrow. He's not pitching tomorrow.
Yeah. So you're looking at the situation where if Fulte gets knocked out again early, you kind of
don't have a guy anymore. Yeah, I guess it's Tehran.
You kind of have to go with Tehran, and that could end up being a nightmare.
Yeah, that's a good point. We should at least mention that. I think you know that's probably enough to cover it. But they've now, and you know, we made a big deal. They were going to carry seven starting pitchers on the roster for that kind of purpose. But right now, the only guys that you have to go multiple innings for Monday's game are Fulte and Tehran. I can't imagine they're going to ask any of the other starting caliber pitchers to go multiple innings in that game. After the way that the first game, I mean, maybe Anibal is going to go multiple. Maybe is it throw day for Anibal? Maybe that's what I'm thinking in my head. Could they go to Anibal Sanchez and then just decide that they're going to pitch God knows who in game five? I don't know. I mean, that's the other option is no. I mean, if they really don't want to use Tehran, they go to Anibal. But you have to have somebody start game five. It's probably not going to be Newcomb. I don't know what they're going to do, honestly. And to be fair, you have to manage this next game just as you did this one, as if this is your season, because it is, and worry about the rest later. So that would be the argument for going to Anibal, would be that, look, you got to win tonight, and maybe you trust him more than Julio. I think you clearly do at this point, because you started him in the series, and you haven't pitched Julio, but that's a decision that they hopefully do not have to make, because Fulte getting knocked out early would be really bad.
Could you imagine if they somehow get through this game four, and then have to go back to LA for game five against Kershaw again?
Against Kershaw again and without Fulte. So
with
you're talking about
nose starting a bullpen that's probably going to end up being gassed.
I mean, you get the day off, which is nice. You get Tuesday off, which they're going to need. And maybe you think, you know, the guys who went long, like Gausman, who went two innings tonight, maybe Freed with 2 days off, might be able to go again on Wednesday, which is what it would be for game five. So maybe you have, it wouldn't be a fresh bullpen, but maybe you have some guys who have just had 2 days off and might be able to go again. But yeah, it's not going to be Fulte. So you get through game four, and regardless, you have Clayton Kershaw against a starting pitcher that isn't Mike Foltynewicz, and that means the Dodgers are heavy favorites, which we know already, but just worth saying out loud.
Fulte's got to, I said at the beginning, Fulte's got to go at least six tomorrow if the Braves want any chance of getting through this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And on the other side, I would still argue that if he doesn't have it, you got to get him out of the game. So it's a delicate spot in that you need innings, but you also can't afford to manage like it's a regular season game and leave him out there if he doesn't have it. So I don't envy Brian Snicker at the moment. He's going to have some decisions to make, I think, on Monday afternoon and evening. And we'll talk about them. But the easiest thing that would bail him out and bail the whole team out is if Fulte is Fulte in capital letters. But he wasn't that in the opener, so we'll see what he has now. I mean, he didn't throw many pitches, which is on the bright side. But he's also on short rest for the first time all season, so we'll see.
Man, this is really just a harrowing situation, because you're looking at all of this and everything this team has accomplished, and it's really just going to come down to how much gas is left in the tank, which, I mean, it sucks, but that's baseball. And
I'm
not looking forward to the reactions if things go south.
Sure, but I mean, it's me and you talking, and we're both similar in our thinking in a lot of ways. We should at least say out loud so people don't accuse us of anything else. It's a good problem to have because they won this game tonight. The season could have easily ended about an hour ago, and it didn't. So, you know, all credit to the Braves for getting this win. You know, it has to be said that they're still a huge underdog to win the series because they have to win two more games, including the aforementioned Game 5 on the road against Clayton Kershaw. But they're still alive in the series. So they won a game. They scored a run. That, I mean, coming in, it was like we were kind of kidding, but scoring a run was like a win tonight because after the first two games, it was like we were, again, mostly joking, but there was a world in which they got shut out three games in a row. Like that was on the table coming into the
night. Oh, yeah. So. And we're talking about tomorrow/today. We're not talking about April, which, I mean, at this point in the season, it's all you can really ask for, right?
Absolutely. And by the way, I said this on yesterday's podcast. And by the way, apparently, that's what we thought. So I'm sorry, I'm reading Twitter. And as we live talk here, some of the guys who were at the press conference are saying that Julio Teheran is available in the bullpen. And they kind of made a point to say that. So I think he might be the guy that we see if Folty cannot go a long way on Monday afternoon, which is not a surprise. Teheran is fresh. I would point out that for me, he would only be the guy that I went to if Folty couldn't get through three. If you just need like a guy to go three innings, then it's got to be Teheran. I understand that, but if Folty can get you into the fifth or sixth, then you just need to skip. You need to skip over Teheran. That'd be my opinion. Would you agree with that? Because I think it's a situation where you only go to him if you need multiple innings. Like probably.
Yeah, he would be my guy to stretch the game out, not necessarily the guy to be used to just get outs. He would be the guy that I would put in there to soak up innings and just either keep the game close or hold a lead of one run by the skin of your teeth for a few innings. He's not the guy I would go to like they used Fried tonight or no. Like they used Tukey tonight or guys like that just for an inning or a third. Or
I would not do that. Yeah.
I would, if I put in Teheran, win, lose, or draw, it would be for at least two innings.
Yep, I totally agree. Using him situationally would not be a good idea. And it's Rich Hill for the Dodgers. So we'll see what happens there. Rich Hill is a guy who could be incredible and also has a history of kind of blowing up and also has that blister. And Rich Hill's a pretty high variance pitcher. So a lot of outcomes on the table. Like it would not blow anybody away if we were just talking about the scenario where Teheran's asked to go multiple innings. That's a spot where like it's 4-3 in the third and Folty doesn't have it, but you're not getting blown out and you just got to kind of hold the line. That's a spot where you might need Teheran's work. And listen, I will say this about Julio. He's not the guy who profiles as a playoff anchor kind of guy at this point in time, but he had some moments this year where he was very good. Especially late in the season, he had some really nice starts. I think a lot of that, you know, if he could just throw strikes, it would be helpful. Like his opponent batting average is like, you know, legendarily low, like lowest since Maddux. You know, that conveniently ignores all of the home runs and walks. But there are nights when he has it, and it'd be nice to have that align if he has to be used.
Yeah, I mean, he, in his last start of the season against the Mets, he went six innings and allowed one run, which I would take in a heartbeat. But then, you know, yes. As we all know, he has the meltdown potential as well.
Yes.
I mean, you really have to take the good with the bad. You'll see what happens with him. And with Rich Hill going, I mean, he's another guy like that can shut a team down for six, seven, eight innings, or he could just get blown out. And with the way this series is going, I mean, if that crowd gets loud, if Hill starts missing his spots, who knows?
Yeah, I will say they've not listed this yet. I was looking for Vegas odds. They're not available yet. I'm expecting this to be the most narrow spread of the week. You know, Vegas odds aren't everything, but they're often instructive. The Dodgers have been at least minus 160 favorites in every game in the series. I think it's going to be a lot closer on Monday because you have the Braves' best pitcher in Folty versus Rich Hill, who is, by all accounts, not the best pitcher from the Dodgers. In fact, he's their fourth best pitcher in the rotation because of how good Ryu's been and Buehler's been. So you have on paper, your best pitching matchup of the series. Granted, it's Folty on short rest, but, you know, just names and performance recently, give me Folty versus Rich Hill as pretty much the best case scenario. So, and at home and all that fun stuff. I know the Braves have been better on the road than home this year, but you still want home field advantage as we saw tonight. So giddy up and we'll do this thing for sure. Well, Joe, please share any other takes that you have. We've gone longer than we've been going on the podcast, probably because it was a win and it's more fun to talk about wins. But if you have any more takes, fire them off. And if not, please tell people where they can find your stuff. I know you're on the podcast semi-regularly, but people should be following your work as well.
I mean, all I really want to say is, like, this season has been so amazing and magical and fun. And even if the Braves go out in 4 or 5 in the division series, we shouldn't take that as a failure and an indictment on the season. Nobody expected this team to get this far. No one expected this team to, like, win tonight and do what they did. And, you know, we should just kind of take everything at face value and appreciate the season as it was. And coming from me, who is an eternal pessimist, that says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think people think of me that way, as the eternal pessimist, but I know you and I kind of think similarly on most things. But that's well said. I would echo that, to be sure. We'll have a podcast on Monday evening, regardless, win or loss. I've been saying that. That'll be the game podcast. If it is a loss, we will talk about the game and we'll save the big picture stuff for later. We'll have the whole offseason to talk about next year and all that stuff. I see all your mailbag questions that you're sending me about free agency and stuff. I promise we'll hit all of that between now and April. But for now, Monday's podcast will be here. I will do it. It probably won't be immediately after the game because of my other commitments. But by the time you wake up on Tuesday morning, there'll be a podcast, I promise. And otherwise, we'll talk about the game. Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate it, man. We'll do it again very, very shortly, hopefully. And if nothing else, we'll talk in the offseason because there's some fun stuff to talk about then, too. But we'll just wait on that until then.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.